Of Ways and Means, and it is Wednesday, the 18th of February, and we have only 1 hour this morning for our work because at 9:30 we have to go swear in a new governor. First time in Oregon history that that has happened. Not something that I've been looking forward to, but I guess we roll with the punches. Let's start today with Medical Imaging Board, Mr. Conlow, and Ms. Earp, and Claire Clark, of course. And welcome, and introduce yourself for the record, and let's fire away.
Thank you, Chairman Monroe and members of the committee. My name is Ed Conlow. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Medical Imaging. With me is Kimberly Earp, who is a radiation therapy member of the board. The Board of Medical Imaging is a health licensing agency overseen by a 12-person board, including four physicians, five technologists, licensees, and three public members. The OBMI's goal is to protect the public health and safety. Main function is to license technologists who perform imaging studies for diagnosis and treatment. We also oversee education programs for limited X-ray machine operators. Also review and approve continuing education classes offered for CE credit in Oregon. We currently have 5,400 permanent licensees, which is about a third more than we had 4 years ago. Medical imaging includes radiography, radiation therapy, sonography, MRI, and nuclear medicine. And we also issue limited permits for limited X-ray machine operators. We are a three-person office funded through license fee of $120 for a two-year license. We share IT and office resources with other health-related licensing boards. We have an interagency agreement with the Oregon Health Authority's Radiation Protection Services for the equivalent of a quarter-time investigator who also works as an inspector for RPS, so we can piggyback on the inspectors who are already traveling around the state. We can share resources that way. We have challenges. Number of licensees is creeping upward by several hundred per year. Our goal is to manage within existing resources and the existing fee structure. However, our ending balance is trending downward. Currently, for the projection for the current biennium is we'd have about a 9 month worth of ending balance, but due to inflationary factors for the upcoming next biennium, our ending balance is projected to be only between 5 and 6 months at the end of the next biennium. I've alerted our board members that it's possible that we would need to seek a fee increase in the 2017-19 biennium, possibly if current trends continue this way. For our part, we've always been able to underspend our budget, and we will endeavor to continue to underspend as much as we can. An ongoing challenge is that the board deals with a health environment that is constantly evolving due to improvements in imaging technology. For example, in 2010, the legislature added MRI, nuclear medicine, and sonography to the board's jurisdiction. In addition, recently we've written rules governing computed tomography. We've had discussions of legislation regarding fluoroscopy and new forms of ultrasound that are coming down the pike. So it seems like this is kind of an ongoing, never-ending process of change that we have to be able to respond to. Going forward, we will focus on customer service, prompt issuance of licenses and permits, responding quickly to inquiries, improving communications with our licensees and the health provider community and the public through community meetings, improving our website, focusing on an e-newsletter that we try to get out to the hospitals and the imaging directors and anybody we can find who will take it. We have a policy option package, 130. I wanted to mention the $52 fingerprint background fee. Most of that fee is passed through to the state police and to the FBI, who do the background check. This past January 1st, the board instituted fingerprint background checks on new applicants only. As we were already doing and will continue to do, the board does LEDS state police background checks on all license and permit renewals, and we'll continue to do that on renewals. But for first-time applicants, we're doing the fingerprint background check. That's all I had. Thank you.
Are there questions for Mr. Conlow? Yes, Barbara.
Thank you. What has been your kind of complaint rate, and how is it as a percentage of your thing, and what's your timeline on resolving those?
We get about averages about 45 per year. We had a bump in 2012 when we started to strictly enforce the licensure requirement that came into effect in 2010. We had a number of people who hadn't gotten their sonography license yet, so we started calling them before the board in 2012. We had a bump then, but generally it's been about 45 per year, give or take. Most of those come from processing license renewals, and if someone is late or practicing without a license, those cases come to our attention, but through that renewal process, as we're processing the paper and doing the background checks, that's how we discover most of the offenses. We get not very many independent complaints coming in, just a handful a year. With the license complaints that come in, we can resolve almost everyone by the next board meeting. When we discover it through the renewal process, we can handle that. And if there's an issue, it's dealt with by the next quarterly board meeting. So that's within 120 days. Most complaints, which may be of a different nature, may require someone to our investigator to go down and look at a case that might some of the usually they're also resolved within the next board meeting. Occasionally you'll get one that requires more legwork or subpoenas or something like that, and a couple of those will take long. We've had one that took 6 months. We had one that went to litigation that took 21 months. But that's really an outlier. Most of these are resolved by the next quarterly board meeting.
Okay.
Additional
And on the I wondered about it because you mentioned that you've added on the fingerprinting. So do issues come up in background checks that you then do further investigation of, and do you track that?
And at this point I can only really speak to the fact that we've done the LEDs the state police checks for years, and things do pop up, arrest record kinds of issues. If certain types of offenses will have, applicants may need to come before the board to address those issues. So I suspect that'll be a similar experience with the fingerprints. But we don't really have much experience yet.
Right. And can I ask one quick last question? And are there disqualifiers from the background checks? Do you have kind of a set of this prior conviction would disqualify you from getting a license?
There's not.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Huffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question and then a comment. Thanks, Ed. Can we assume, since you've got a fairly substantial increase in licensees, that those folks are actually going to work finding jobs? Are the schools putting out about the right amount of folks to get into the field, or do we see folks getting out of school with and applying for licenses and then looking for jobs that maybe aren't there?
And Representative Huffman, Chair Monroe, members of the committee, I don't have a real good feel for that, and I think there's a piece of legislation that's going to look at some workforce data, and we'll probably be collecting that. I hear anecdotally that there's a shortage of jobs for radiographers. I don't know if Kimberly Earp can she works in the field, and maybe she could address that if you want.
So I'm the chief radiation therapist at Adventist Medical Center in Portland, as well as a Oregon Board of Medical Imaging board member. And I would have to say that for the most part, it depends on the modality that you're working in. If ultrasound, there's a lot of demand. They do a lot of call. Radiation therapy, there's a little bit of less demand right now. A lot of hospitals are trying to do more with less because of the federal funding changes with regards to Medicare reimbursement and things like that. So we are tightening down the screws as much as possible to get more work out of the same people, if not reducing staff. So I wouldn't, though, say that there's a lot of I've gotten phone calls from students looking for work specifically in radiation therapy, but I don't know that the same need exists in other places.
Okay. All right, thank you. And quick comment.
Go ahead.
In January, I had an MRI on back and neck, and the two techs and the dowels, that they really walked me back from the cliff. I'm claustrophobic, and it was hell. And they did a phenomenal job. They were two outstanding people, so I just wanted to put that on the record. There's some good folks out there. Yeah, I bet they are.
Yeah, I've been in one of those tubes that goes... And that was interesting. Okay, anything else? And Kimberly, you want to add anything additional?
Good.
Okay.
I want to thank you for your support of this committee.
Yeah, thank you. Claire?
Good morning, Co-Chair Monroe, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Claire Clark from the Chief Financial Office. This morning, I'll give a brief presentation on the governor's budget for the Board of Medical Imaging, which is situated within the public safety outcome area of the 10-year plan for Oregon. It provides consumer protections to Oregonians who undergo medical imaging studies by setting high standards for licensure and conducting investigations. The 2015-17 governor's budget for this board continues services at the current level and incorporates expenditure limitation and revenues for the board to conduct those criminal background checks. They will conduct these checks for first-time applicants only. The fingerprint-based background checks will be on first-time applicants only. And the fee specifically is $52 for the criminal background check, and of that fee, $7.50 will be retained by the board for administrative costs, and $44.50 will be transferred to the Oregon State Police. For the portion of the fee that's transferred to the Oregon State Police, the budget includes $49,000 of expenditure limitation. So in total, the 2015-17 budget for the board is $915,791 other funds. This is a 7% increase from the 2013-15 legislatively approved budget. This will leave the board with approximately $216,000 in ending cash balance, which is equal to 5.5 months of operating expenses. I would like to point out a small revision in this budget. The governor's budget as printed includes $3,750 in expenditure limitation and $7,950 in revenues to expand access to fluoroscopy permits for physician's assistants. This package was approved with the assumption that the governor's office would put forward legislation to expand access to these permits, but they chose not to do so. However, legislation has been put forward doing essentially the same thing in House Bill 2880. So this, it's package 131, and that might be a good estimate for the the fiscal and revenue impacts for that bill. But at this time, we are removing it from the governor's budget. And that is everything I have for you today.
Okay, other questions?
Just a comment, Mr. Chair.
Huffman.
Claire, thank you so much, and we all appreciate the picture. But as a health care concern, so that Senator Roblin in 17 doesn't break his arm patting himself on the back for the lighthouse, the Gorge also has a couple of great photos that might work for your presentation. So Multnomah Falls and Crown Point, just to point out.
Thank you.
I don't know why he's picking
Senator Roblin.
I don't know why he's picking out Representative Krieger's district. That's just south of my district. I just like to help other people. So I'll talk to Representative Krieger when I get done.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, let's move to speech-language pathology. Is that right, John? Welcome.
Thank you.
Here. I just met her. Welcome again, Aaron. And it's a pleasure to have you here. Introduce yourself and go ahead and give us your presentation.
Okay, thank you, Co-Chair Monroe and members of the committee. My name is Aaron Haig, and I'm the brand new executive director as of February 1st for the Board of Examiners of Speech-Language Pathology and Audiology. And as you know, the board was established in 1973 to protect the public through the regulation and practice of speech-language pathologists, speech-language pathology assistants, and audiologists in Oregon. I also want to thank some of you for meeting with me in advance, being as this is my first time down here, and that actually was very helpful to me. One of the most significant health issues of preschool children in Oregon and across the country actually are speech-language disorders, and these professionals serve vulnerable children, adults, seniors, including those with multiple disabilities and following stroke and traumatic brain injury. So it's very serious work that these professionals are doing. We achieve our goals through establishing standards consistent with national benchmarks, and we review the credentials as we put forward the licenses. We do ongoing quality monitoring of licensees through compliance audits, including for supervision of the SLPAs, which is terribly important. We also investigate complaints regarding professional competence and conduct and issue disciplinary actions as needed. And we also reach out to the public through customer service surveys, which we also send out actually once a year in an email blast to our 2,400 members. So we've actually gotten at least 800 responses last go around on that. So it was statistically significant. And we also want to always use best practices with our board of directors. And so that's one of our KPMs as well. One of the questions that's come up in this committee is how do we reduce our caseload and try to keep it down to a reasonable size? And we do that by educating our members, our licensees, through email blasts, newsletter communications, and then we work with the professional associations as well as the three training institutions. And even when we don't take action, we'll still send a closed letter and do a little bit of educating at that point. Our priorities are concerned, well, first of all, no fee increase. We're not asking for a fee increase at this time. And we obviously share the concern about public safety and the fact that licensees are moving from state to state. And so we are implementing and will be implementing the enhanced criminal background checks. I was the guinea pig. So I passed with the fingerprinting and what have you. So we will be getting that going here this next few months. In the same manner as was just described by my colleague at Medical Imaging. And we do share with these other organizations up in our area there resources, database, IT folks, and then we also have online renewal, which is going to be happening at the end of this year. So we do feel that we need to add a staff investigator because we are having more cases now, and we expect to have We are told that once we start the background checks that our cases are probably going to increase by about 6 to 10%. So we are going to need help, need more investigative help. And so that's why we are asking in our policy option package for a part-time investigator, half-time FTE, to support our existing caseload, but also to help us handle the caseload, which we think is going to double. And also then to help with some potential, we know we'll probably have increased legal charges and the clinical consultants. So our total package, policy option package, is $124,554. And we expect that our ending balance will be $164,000, which is 5.7 months of operating. In the past, BSPA budgeted 7 months, but our renewal process has been moved up a month. We started in November now, so we think that will be helpful to cash flow, and thus we can get away with the just about 6 months of reserves. And I can take questions now, and if I don't have the answer, I'll get back to you.
Questions? Okay, why don't we hear from Claire?
All right. Co-Chair Monroe, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Claire Clark from the Chief Financial Office. So I'll give a brief presentation on the budget for the Board of Speech, Language, Pathologists, and Audiologists. The 2015-17 Governor's budget for the board provides resources to continue current services and the resources to accommodate growth in the board's investigative workload. The board is situated in the public safety outcome area of the 10-year plan for Oregon. It provides consumer protections by setting licensing standards to ensure that clients receive high-quality services. So here you can see the board's history of expenditure limitation and FTE. For the 2013-15 biennium, the legislature approved increasing the executive director position from a 0.6 FTE to full-time. The 2013 legislature also added limitation and increased administrative staff for the board to conduct criminal background checks. For 2015-17, the governor's budget for the board is approximately $700,000. Which is a 28% increase from the current biennium. The 2015-17 budget includes inflationary increases and adds a half-time investigator position. This chart displays the revenues for the board over time. This board is also funded with 100% other funds revenues that are generated from biannual licensing and renewal fees of speech-language pathologists, speech-language pathology assistants, and audiologists. In July of 2009, the board raised its fees to add additional staffing that was approved by the December 2010 Emergency Board. However, the 2011 legislature did not approve this fee increase and reverted fees to the previous lower level that had been established in 2005. For the 2013-15 biennium, the legislature approved increasing application and renewal fees to their current level. The 2015-17 budget, as Aaron has mentioned, does not include a fee increase. It leaves approximately $165,000 in ending cash balance, which is equal to over 5 months of operating expenses. And though the board will have sufficient resources to fund the additional half-time investigator position for the 2015-17 biennium, it's likely that they will need to consider a fee increase for 2017-19. So in short, the governor's budget maintains current services and adds an investigator position at half time. The additional investigator will allow the board to implement criminal background checks, address a backlog of investigations, as well as increase and address the increase in the board's overall investigative workload. The position will also ensure the board is able to keep up with potential growth in the board's speech-language pathology licenses if Senate Bill 287, which I suppose I should describe currently, the speech-language pathologists are offered an exemption from licensure from this board if they are licensed through the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. The two boards are currently working together to eliminate that exemption so that speech-language pathologists are solely licensed by this board. And correct me if I made an error. Okay, thank you.
And then the other folks will be grandfathered as long as they renew, then they can keep up their TSPC license. And this was passed unanimously by the TSPC Commission and has support of OEA and the various training institutions.
So the idea is that this half-time investigator position will also be able to help with any increases in investigative workload that result from a potential growth in the board's licensee base. And that concludes my presentation. I'd take any questions if you have them.
Questions for either one of these ladies? Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we'll go to the vets, the Veterinary Medical Examining Board. And Lori, are you on lead?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Lori Makkinen, Executive Director of the Veterinary Board. With me to my right is our chair, Dr. Robert Lester, who was appointed to the board in October 2007. Dr. Lester is a former vice president for professional relationships with Banfield, the pet hospital. And he was the 2011-13 Oregon delegate to the American Association of Veterinary State Boards. This is very important to us, so if it's not important to you, let me know. Dr. Lester currently is the Dean of Clinical, Assistant Dean of Clinical Relations at Lincoln Memorial Veterinary School in Harrogate, Tennessee. And he's also on the delegate to the Council of Education. This is Mr. Mark Reed, who is our public member, currently ending his second term. He is the director of public programs with the World Forestry Center, and he and his wife have a little farm in Beaver Creek, and his hobby, I have to tell you, is restoring carousel horses and pipe organs. So, the board was established in 1903 and operates under the authority of Chapter 6, ORS Chapter 686. The mission basically is to regulate the profession of veterinary practice in Oregon by licensing and monitoring veterinarians, veterinary technicians, and certified euthanasia technicians. We have eight members, five of which are veterinarians, two are public members, and one is a certified veterinary technician. We have 2.75 staff, one investigator, one part-time assistant, and me. If you can see that we have currently, the numbers have ticked up a bit since I did this chart. We have 2182 veterinarians and 1186 certified techs, and we are running pretty steadily at about 100 euthanasia techs throughout the state. Euthanasia techs work in shelters, and their only business with us is performing euthanasia according to minimum standards that we set. I'm going to jump down to the complaint stuff because I think that's probably where you're going to have more questions. We get a lot of complaints. The complaints have jumped up a bit in the last couple of biennia, largely because I've been tracking them more than I used to, also tracking them in some ways by workload rather than individual complaints, because a complaint comes in and we may have as many as a dozen conversations with the complainant. With the veterinarians involved. So those numbers have jumped.
What are the nature of the complaints?
Well, most of the complaints that we get, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, most of the complaints that we get relate to issues that we don't regulate, like fees, communication, attitude, hours of operation, things like that. But the complaints that are valid for us involve, I've listed them here, failure to use, these are the disciplinary issues, failure to use adequate pain management, diagnostic procedures and treatments. We have minimum standards for all of these things. One of the biggest complaints that we get revolve around patient records, records that are not properly made out, documented, or records that are not provided to clients or to other veterinarians. We had a couple of cases in this biennium with veterinarians handling animals roughly without good cause. And then, unfortunately, we've had a number of issues involving drug or alcohol abuse or using the veterinary license to prescribe for themselves.
And Mr. Chair, as a brief
yes,
follow-up. So what is an in, what, could you just briefly then say, like, what is an invalid complaint?
An invalid, Mr. Chair, Representative Smith-Warner, an invalid
doesn't have to be exhaustive, but okay, just to
sure.
give us a sense.
Charged, overcharged. Mm. We okay. don't regulate fees.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead.
Actually, I'm pretty, well, we have a couple of legislative concepts. One is the easy one is the cite and fine authority, and this is something that we've been pursuing for a number of years. It basically permits the board to write what would amount to a traffic ticket for low-level violations so that we don't have to go through the disciplinary process, and it doesn't become a part of the licensee's permanent record. We would use this authority for things like failure to post a license in a clinic, failure to fully report CE, things that are not related to patient or public safety. Mm-hmm. The other concept, which is HB 2474, is facility registration. And both of these concepts were introduced in the last session by the professional organization, because these are both issues that both we as a board and the professional organization want to see happen. We currently don't have the ability to inspect a clinic unless we get a complaint, a specific complaint. Of the clinics that we have inspected in this biennium, 50% of them were found to be significantly below the minimum standards for facilities. And those standards are things like air quality, lighting, having running water, heat, proper isolation for infectious animals, basically things like that that are very minimum standards, things that restaurants, barbershops, other health facilities are already subject to. So that would involve, we're projecting a registration fee of $150 to fund a full-time investigator. And we're looking at probably a provisional license for the first year that would be based on self-inspection by the clinics to certify that they are meeting minimum standards, and then when the revenue is available, we'll have an investigator who goes out and does periodic inspections. I think that's all I have.
Okay. Right now, you can't just go in and inspect a facility?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, no, not unless we have a specific complaint. And the problem with that is most clients don't ever see what goes on beyond the lobby or an exam room. And so the complaints that we get usually are generated by current employees or ex-employees or somebody who manages to get back and see that things are not the way they should be.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Smith-Warner.
Thank you. And I think this is the first time where I've seen laid out what the fines have been for your violations, and I'm not sure whether, you know, whether there aren't fines in other boards in the disciplinary cases, but do you guys have a set schedule, or is that what the board does, is decide on a case-by-case basis what the fine will be for violations?
Mr. Chair, Co-Chair, Representative
yes.
Smith-Warner, we have a maximum fine per violation of $1,000. The board has a policy of, depending on the facts in the case and the nature of the violation, usually the first violation is a lower level fine, might be. That we go as low as $25 for some things. We have cases where the fines go up to $7,000 or $8,000 because mm-hmm. the issues are pretty serious. And most cases we settle through stipulated agreement. We've only gone to hearing, I think, three or four times in 18 years. And we have one case. One of the reasons that our turnaround time on complaints is 182 days is we've got a couple of outliers. One case that's still on appeal from 2007, hoping that will be over. And then another one with a very difficult situation that took a couple of years to resolve.
Okay. Mr. Lester, Mr. Reed, do you have anything to add?
No, sir, Mr. Chair.
I have nothing to add, but welcome to any questions you have.
Thank you. Thank you for coming.
You.
Ms. Clark, where is she? There she is.
Co-Chair Monroe, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Claire Clark from the Chief Financial Office. So this morning I'll give another brief presentation for the Board of Veterinary Medical Examiners. The 2015-17 Governor's Budget for the Veterinary Medical Examining Board continues services at the current level and adjusts investigative staff to accommodate potential expansions in the board's regulatory authority. The Veterinary Medical Examining Board is also situated within the public safety outcome area of the 10-year plan for Oregon. It provides access to consumer protections to ensure veterinary care conforms to current medical standards and practices and is consistent with the best interests of the public. Again, here you can see the board's expenditures over time. For the 2013-15 biennium, the legislature approved inflationary increases, but otherwise did not change the agency's budget. For the 2015-17 governor's budget, the budget is approximately $933,000, which is a 23% increase from the 2013-15 legislatively approved budget. The 2015-17 budget adds one full-time investigator position to conduct initial and random yearly inspections of registered veterinary facilities, as outlined in House Bill 2474. This chart displays the board's revenues over time. This board is also 100% other funds. The board's revenues primarily generated from annual licensing and renewal fees for veterinarians, veterinary technicians, and euthanasia technicians. For the 2013-15 biennium, the legislature approved increasing veterinary and certified veterinary technician license and renewal fees to ensure that the board retained a sufficient ending balance. The 2015-17 governor's budget proposes adding an annual veterinary facility registration fee, which would add approximately $125,000 in other funds revenues. And this offsets the additional costs of the investigator position that will be inspecting those facilities. I'd also like to note that the board has voted to implement criminal background checks, but is working on implementation details. So it's anticipated that the board will use the administrative process to establish these fees during the interim, but they will, of course, return to this body at the appropriate time to have those fees ratified. The 2015-17 budget leaves approximately $378,000 in ending balance, which is equal to over 9 months of operating expenses. And this board needs about 6 months of ending balance due to its renewal cycle. So to summarize, the governor's budget includes resources for current services and adds one full-time investigator position to inspect those veterinary facilities. That's everything for today.
Questions?
Can I?
Sure. Yes.
Thank you.
Representative
Can I just Warner. Confirm the math and say that I was going to ask how much the per facility fee was, but then I saw in here that it was proposed at 125, and your number proposal is 125,000. So is the assumption that there's 1,000? Is there a solid knowledge that there are 1,000 veterinary clinics in the state?
Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Smith Warren, in my estimates, I use 1,000 as my assumption for the revenue estimates, and I think that Lori can perhaps speak to how she came to that estimate.
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Smith Warner, we don't have an exact count at this point because our data, since we don't register facilities, the information we have in our database isn't really reflective of what might be out there.
I'm sure there's multiple vets in one facility, one vet that travels in multiple facilities.
Right, exactly. And OVMA estimated 600 facilities. We did a check of the corporations division, which looked like there might be 800, so we'll have to find out.
Okay.
You know, it strikes me people get really concerned if they think animals aren't being properly cared for. I've been in this business for about 40 years, and I get an awful lot of letters and emails and whatever dealing with animal abuse or suspected animal abuse or whatever. So the inspector position that you're seeking, I think, makes a lot of sense. And of course, we'll have to see if there's consensus to fund that position, but I'm there. Okay, anything else? Thank you very much, ladies.
Thank you all.
Appreciate it. John? Okay, John's going to check and see if anyone's signed up that wants to. I don't see anyone.
Okay, she came in. Must be in the overflow room.
Yeah, they're in the overflow room. They're interested in something that's going to be happening in about an hour. John, where are we? Are we meeting tomorrow? And if so, what are we dealing with?
Chair Monroe, members of the committee, we are meeting tomorrow, the regular time. We should have the full allotment of time as well, and we are hearing from the Board of Dentistry tomorrow.
Board of Dentistry. Oh, yes, I think my dentist is going to be here. She told me.
So do we invite Senator Girard when these things happen?
Well, we or Representative should. Senator Girard in the past has been a member of this.
Right. Or Representative Hayden as well.
Oh, that's right. That's Representative Hayden.
Our dentists have doubled.
Yes. So we want to make sure that the dentists are well represented. Well, I will see all of you in a few minutes upstairs. Thank you for coming today, and we are adjourned.
That was a tough morning.